Hello, and welcome to another episode of Tactical Startup. It's been a while. Lots of things have happened. Surgeries, babies. I don't know if my baby was born the last time we did an episode. It might have been that she was coming. So lots of new stuff. Surgeries, babies, COVID, sickness in general. It has been a challenge, but I'm here. I am back. And we have today guest Ryan Kilmer. I think I pronounced that right. If I didn't, or Kilmer. Kilmer. Sorry, I'll have to.
Kilmer, close enough.
Okay. We're having him, and he has an accounting degree. He's a finance degree. He's a director of finance of a $100 million company. He's one of 14 certified CFOs nationwide with the CFO Project. He's one of 6 certified trainers of CFOs nationwide with the CFO Project. He owns the Net Profit CFO, helping small business owners have a growing and more profitable business. He's worked with over 200 small business owners. So let's welcome him right after this. You're listening to Tactical Startup, a podcast dedicated to building amazing businesses. I'm your host, Taylor Darcy. In this podcast, we explore ways to innovate, improve, and level up your business through sales, marketing, automation, and business planning. Successful businesses pivot when times are bad and stay the course when times are good. We'll have guests from different walks of life to help you see that success is not only possible, but even probable, no matter when or where you start. Through hard work and strategic planning, you can have the entrepreneurial life you've always dreamed. Tune in weekly to level up your business. Ryan, welcome. How are you?
Doing great. Thank you. Happy to be here.
Great. I'm happy to have you. in fact, we had to reschedule a couple of times because of my family issues. Your schedule, my schedule just was not lining up. And So thank you for your patience and understanding. So,
Of course.
So you have an accounting degree and a finance degree, an MBA or master's in finance?
No, just both bachelor's degrees.
Okay.
I don't have my MBA.
Okay. Is that something that you're going to look into doing eventually, or is it just kind of
It's kind of I mean, I have looked into it a little bit, right? I mean, obviously, you know, more schooling, more time, more debt.
Right.
Do I want to go down that road? I don't know. Do I really need it for, you know, the work that I'm doing with the small business clients that I'm working with right now? No, probably not. Right.
Yeah.
It's kind of just meh.
All right.
Thought about it a little bit.
Sure.
But probably not.
That's fine.
Yeah.
Everybody has their thing, you know, and nothing is 100% right for any person. And I tell people that all the time because, you know, they think, oh, just because I've got more school than 99% of the population. I have not only my bachelor's, I have 2 master's degrees and I have my law degree. I'm tapped out and I don't say that, but people will ask me and I said, you know, really it depends on your goals, right? Like if you're able to do it without it, then great. But I'll tell you, I learned a lot obviously through those different degrees and I'm not they're right for me. That doesn't mean they're right for everybody. And I don't want people to think that they shouldn't do it just because they're an entrepreneur. I get that a lot. People are like, well, I'm an entrepreneur. I don't need a degree. And you're right. Like to run a successful business, you don't need a degree. But there's a lot of stuff that because I also teach business law at a community college. There's a lot of stuff in what I teach as well as when I'm working with the client that I wouldn't have been able to have taught anyone had I have not gotten the education that I did. And so there's a lot of knowledge that, and that's how I'm able to run so many different things of myself because of the education that I achieved. So I say that because there's a negative stigma in entrepreneur world. Oh, if you have a degree, you know, it's not as, you know, oh, you don't need a degree. And yet I don't think that's an accurate, I don't think that's accurate in reality, right? Like it can't hurt you it can only help you as long as you're applying the information that you're learning and not just doing it for the sake of the degree. So,
right. Anyway. Yeah, I agree.
So as a director of finance, talking money, you work with lots of small businesses. What is it that you find is most challenging when you're working with a small business?
Yep. So the number one thing is just for them to figure out and know financially what's working and what's not in their business. That is probably the biggest thing, right? Is, you know, there's no, most of the time in a small business, there's no, you know, financial scoreboard or dashboard, right? Typically, you know, as a business grows, they've probably got a bookkeeper and most probably have, you know, like a CPA that does their taxes, right? But there's no advising, there's no financial expert that is telling them, hey, you know, this is really working or this isn't, or this is where you need to pivot to make more profit and more cash flow. That is, you know, by far from what I've seen, the biggest challenge.
So what type of information then that you're able to provide in an advisory capacity that isn't readily available on Google? And I say that because people try to use Google for everything, even when it's inappropriate to use Google. So I really want to say, where is it that you can bring value, right?
Sure. Sure. Absolutely. Yeah. So anytime I start working with a client, start working with a business, I really take a dive in and find what's really the key factors that are driving revenue, profit, and cash flow for the business, right? And, you know, given, you know, whatever industry that you're in, right, you're not going to just go out and Google and find that, right? And once I find those drivers, right, then I can narrow it down to, you know, usually somewhere between 10 and 15. So we're not looking at a million numbers. I don't want to overwhelm a business owner. That doesn't do them any good, doesn't do me any good.
Right.
We can really narrow it down to 10 or 15 important drivers. And then, you know, we can really dial in and focus on those drivers and make sure that those numbers specifically are on track and that they're where we want them to be. And usually what I find in a business is that there's one or two numbers of those 10 or 15 that are not quite where we want them to be and end up having a huge impact in holding the business back from more profit and more cash flow and ultimately being a healthier business.
Okay. And so how long does this process take? What is someone's commitment if they're going to reach out? Because I think there's also another issue with, like, number one, cost, right? How expensive are you going to be? Number two, is it worth it, right? And then number three, what type of how quickly can we do this, right? Because, you know, small businesses don't have, you know, a huge lead time between things. It's both a blessing and a curse, right? Like, you can implement things really fast, but you can also go downhill really fast if you're not careful. So
yep.
Kind of guide, what would a listener, if they're listening to this or watching this, what can they expect?
Sure, absolutely. So typically I do like to recommend that, you know, if you're going to work with me as a client, that you work with me for at least a year. Because when we look at your numbers, we're forecasting forward at least a year and we're looking at targets and where you want to be a year from now, right? And so it is helpful to work with me for at least a year. I don't require it. You know, I don't have a long-term contract or anything like that. All the work that I do is month to month. So, you know, I've really got to show up and prove my worth every single month. And I think that's a real benefit to clients looking at hiring me.
Right.
As far as on the cost side, you know, right now, the clients that I'm working with, anywhere from $1,500 a month on up to $2,000, $3,000, $4,000 really depends on complexity and the size of the business. But you know, I mean, you take a business and let's just say that they're doing $500,000 in business a year.
Right.
You know, the idea that they could hire a part-time CFO and have some of the guidance and directions and the tools that they're going to bring to the table for $1,500 a month for $18,000 a year, it ends up being a pretty no-brainer deal. And the clients that hire me, you know, we can start implementing right away. and, you know, we're going to dive in and take action right away and improve their profit and cash flow. And so, you know, normally I'm a service that not only do I pay for myself, but you get an even better return than just paying me back.
Right. So as far as results are concerned, and obviously, you know, for the listeners, you got to understand that results are going to vary from industry to industry, business to business, your willingness to listen. I get people that, you know, that when they hire me, they're expecting an you know, an immediate result. And there's literally time that I just can't do it. Right. Like, yep. I can't make things happen sometimes faster than others. And other times they happen beautifully. There's ways of doing that. So setting realistic expectations for people is, in my opinion, one of the most important parts of our jobs. Because, you know, it's like I can work fast, but if you don't work fast, then I can't make you do things for me. So keep those thoughts in mind, is relationships and doing it, you know, as fast as I can, but based on your willingness to work with me. So what type of, when can people start seeing results? Like, how quickly are we talking, like, and realistically too, don't, I mean, there's always going to be a over and under on things or a plus or minus. So.
Yep. Yeah. Typically 2 to 3 months in, right? Because month one, what we're going to do is we're going to have a, you know, if you get started working with me, we're going to have a kickoff call, right? And we're going to be focused a year out, right? Where do, you know, if you and I were sitting down, we were having a conversation, we were looking over your numbers, where do we want them to be a year from today, right? Those are the numbers that we're really going to target, right? And we're going to do that in the kickoff meeting and in the first month's meeting, right? Then from there, you know, I'm going to dive in and do the analysis work and build out the scoreboard, build out the dashboard that we're going to be looking at on a monthly basis moving forward. And then in month two, you know, we're going to meet, we're going to look over the scoreboard and compare where we are compared to where we want to be. And then, you know, leaving the meeting in month two, the business owner is going to have an action plan that's going to move them closer to the numbers where they want to be. Right. And so in months two and three, you know, you can really start to see an impact and see change in the business and see change in your numbers, because you are going to have an action plan that is put together and tells you the most important activities to be doing in the next 30, 60, 90 days, that ties back to your numbers and has a direct impact on profit and cash flow.
Okay. What's been the most significant change you've seen in the businesses you've worked for?
Yeah. So most significant change that I've seen has definitely been in pricing, right? So I work with a lot of service-based businesses.
Sure.
And one of the biggest things that I find is, you know, a lot of times business owners don't dive in and know the direct labor or the direct materials and direct costs that go into them really providing a service. And so, you know, what I oftentimes see is that their margin on a service providing can sometimes be lower than where it should be given the overhead that exists. And so, you know, one of the biggest changes that ends up happening in the businesses that I work with is I go through those numbers with them. They realize that they need to start making more money on their service sales.
Right.
And then, you know, we've got to redo the pricing model, right? And then sometimes that includes we've got to change the package of service that they're offering. But then a lot of times their ideal client all of a sudden or ideal customer all of a sudden changes.
Right.
And, you know, the person that they're looking to do business with is different because, you know, they have a higher dollar offering or what have you. So that's one of the biggest changes that I've seen. And, you know, changing your pricing has such a dramatic impact to revenue that typically flows through to net income and then flows through to cash flow.
Right, right. And I think that's a such an important part. I work with startups all the time, and you know, and occasionally we get on the topic of pricing, like not often, but occasionally. And I had one particular one, service based business, and she was going to charge what she charged as an employee, right? Like her hourly rate as what she was an employee, and she wasn't in business very long, even though I had said, you know, matter of factly to her, you're not pricing yourself adequately. You're not pricing yourself according to a service-based business that's planning on staying in business. Because what ends up happening is after you take out because you have to advertise. You have to, I mean, there's so many different fees that you have to do as a business owner that you have to plan for and part of your budget. And if you're just making what you're making as an employee, you're not making enough. And that isn't to be that you have to gouge your clients. You don't have to like go crazy and make it too expensive on the people that you're helping, but it needs to be able to pay those expenses. You need to be able to pay for an office if you need it, or fill in the blank, right? There's so many things that you need to sit down and figure out what you need. And then you price your model accordingly rather than, oh, well, that's what I got paid as an employee. But you're not taking into account so many other factors in that respect. And so I think some people start a business with, well, I can do this. Well, yeah, you can do that, but how quickly are you going to be, you know, able to, how can you sustain yourself if you're not charging adequately? And I'll admit, when I first started as an attorney, I didn't charge adequately either, right? Like, I didn't put all of these things into it. And then it started like, okay, I need to do better about this because I want to stay in business. And also, I want to serve a different type of clientele than when I originally started. And pricing is probably the easiest way to solve 90% of a small business's problems. Expenses would be one part of it, but even then, like you can only cut so much. Exactly. Right? There's going to be a minimum. There's going to be a floor that you hit, and you can't go any lower unless you're digging, in which case you shouldn't be in business at that point, right? Yep. Like so the better model is find more value to give, which that doesn't cost you more, and to increase prices to where you want to be. And what's amazing is, and I've found this to be true, people will spend money on things that they value. Mm-hmm. And so if they're not buying what you're selling or offering, then you're not adequately communicating your value to them.
Yep.
And sometimes you're never going to be able to communicate that value to somebody because that's their mindset. That's a limiting belief system that goes with that. And so those aren't necessarily people that you want to work with. I know that the clients that I work with now, I'm much happier working with them because they value my services a lot more than the clients that I had when I was less expensive. They didn't value me as much. They took me for granted. They didn't value the information I was giving them, and it made the relationship more difficult. Now, again, it needs to be comparable to your service. If you're charging, $1,000 for a Bic ballpoint pen, there better darn well be a reason why, you know, if you're signing a $1 million deal and it's the only pen, then that's worth $1,000, right? But if you're signing a credit card receipt at a restaurant, that pen better not be $1,000, right?
Right.
Like you have to have, it needs to be comparable to what you're getting. If you're signing this brilliant deal and you just need to ink a thing and it's like, hey, I'll give it to you for $1,000. You know, it's like the Wolf of Wall Street. It's like, sell me this pen, right? Like, I mean, the story is a different matter. We won't go there. But the principle is the same. How do you sell somebody something? They need to see the value in it. And in that moment, Leonardo DiCaprio's character, Jordan Belfort, which I was on a webinar with him many months ago. He basically said, sell me this pen. And then he's like doing all these feature benefit crap. And it's like, there's nothing wrong with that. But the problem is that doesn't sell the actual pen because nobody sees that value. When he said, now I need you to write my name or I need you to write your name. Well, I don't have a pen. You just sold your pen, right? Like that's how you have to do it. Anyway, so like when you're sitting down with somebody, what's the process like for you? Like, what is it the very first thing you do? Do you get their P&Ls? Do you get their, what is it that you work with them on?
Yeah. So the first thing is, you know, kind of like we talked about just a little bit ago is, you know, I've got to make sure that the client is a right fit to work with me.
Sure.
Right. That they are really ready to take, you know, the financial advice that I'm going to bring to the table. Right. Because if they're not, then they're not going to see the value in what I have to offer.
Right.
And I'm not going to have that client very long.
Right.
Right. So the first thing that happens is, you know, I really jump on a call and it's probably 20 to 30 minutes. Right. And the other thing that I really want to understand is I want to understand, you know, the business owner's habits around money. You know, there are a lot, you know, people can develop a lot of bad habits around money, right? And, you know, my job, you know, the way that I see it is, you know, I'm there to help a small business be more healthy, right? And be able to, you know, thrive and really change the statistic that the Small Business Administration has, which is 50% of businesses fail in 5 years, right? That's what I'm really out to change. And so, you know, first I've got to understand, you know, my client as a person, understand their habits, right? Understand right. why they're passionate about their business, and really make sure that they're a right fit to work with me.
Sure.
And then if they are, you know, then I offer a free financial assessment that I'll perform on their business so that I can get in and really make sure there's no red flags. You know, I sure. can inform the business owner about those, but also really get a grasp on how things have been going and how things flow through the business. Right. And for that, for most business owners, that just comes for me to complete that assessment. That just comes down to me getting access to QuickBooks sure. or Xero or whatever accounting software that they're in. And that's where we start. Right. And then from there, you know, I'll put together that assessment, and then the business owner and I schedule a meeting basically to go over that assessment. And then, you know, we can talk about pricing and what it would look like to work together, and I'll answer any questions that they have on their numbers. And, you know, even if they decide not to work with me, you know, there's great value in the financial assessment that I do for free, and that I'm giving away. So
cool.
That's how it looks.
So what are some red flags that you see that are that would prevent you from working with them? And let me back up a little bit. I think one of the biggest issues is that families don't talk about money, and mm-hmm. We develop habits based upon parental habits, and then that transfers into business, and which can both hinder and help. In some respects. And so I tell you that because I struggle with it too. My parents didn't discuss money in a healthy, positive way. And I developed yep. habits that I am currently working on breaking and changing. Because you can, there's something in business that you have to know. You can spend too little and not grow. And you can spend too much and not grow, right? Like before the podcast started, we were talking about a little bit about politics. And, you know, most people are moderates, but I think that that's a valuable lesson for business owners, too. You need to spend money to grow, but you also don't need to go crazy either. But if you have habits in your life, financial habits, like I'm 45 years old, and I will fully admit that my parents did not prepare me for things. And while I do have an MBA in financial management, I revert to the things that I learned as a child, because while I have the knowledge, it doesn't translate into the emotion, right? And I think that that's an important component. In fact, I was going to suggest if you don't have a psychologist that you work with, I would recommend that, because spending habits and developing better financial habits isn't always about your numbers. Yep. A lot of times it's about what you learned and the emotion that goes with what you learned. You know, taking the numbers is just like a symptom of it, right? Like it's the individual psychology of it. Like I think anybody can be successful if they're willing to learn to deal with their emotions properly and then help that translate into fiscal responsibility within their business. So, sorry, back to red flags. What red flags do you see?
Well, first I want to say, so that's actually one of the questions that I ask, right, around the habits of money is, how did your parents handle money, right? And because that's exactly where it comes from, right? So for me, red flags, so first of all, I guess I should tell your audience, you know, I am not a tax expert, first right. and foremost. And in fact, I don't do taxes at all, like zero returns for anybody else. Right.
Right.
But, you know, with my accounting background, you know, one of the things that I am going to dive into is I am going to dive into the books. Right.
Right.
And so, you know, there are, when you have accountants that are good and really know what they're doing, it's really easy to commit fraud and underreport revenues or underreport profits, right? And anything, any activity like that is like a no-go for me, right? And right. So far I've not come across it, but that would certainly be a red flag. Sure. You know, and then, you know, if there's anything else funky going on, right? Like one of the things that I don't like about QuickBooks is you can journal entry to a bank account, which really just doesn't make sense to me, right? Like if you're reconciling the bank account every single month, you should be accounting for every single transaction and you shouldn't need a journal entry. And so if there are, you know, journal entries that shouldn't be there, those are definitely red flags for me that I, you know, not that I won't work with the client immediately, but they trigger questions, right, that I really need to ask and really flush out and make sure things are good. And then, you know, so part of my clientele is working with attorneys and law firms. And so, you know, if I see a history of, you know, trust accounts not being kept properly, right? I mean, that's really, you know, the attorneys and law firms, like, fiscal, you know, duty and responsibility,
right?
You know, anything that crosses the line ethics that way, like if that hasn't been kept properly, you know, I think that speaks to someone's character and, you know, that really makes me weigh and think like, is this the right client for me? Right.
Sure. Sure. And that makes sense because typically when someone's struggling in one area, they might be struggling in another. And sometimes, you know, life happens, and then other times it's choices. And I think it really depends on the individual person, whether that's a true two.
Yep.
So what, you know, if we could break it down for listener and say, what's the one like wisdom thing, right? Like, what is it, the one thing that you see that if you could wave a magic wand for somebody and change it, what would it be that you would like to have a more successful business, right? Like, I mean, just within your wheelhouse, give us an idea of, for me, it's like, treat your business like a business and not like, you know, a hobby. Right. Get your contracts in place. Get your formation. Treat it like you would, like the professional that you aspire to be, and protect yourself with legal things. Handle your business. Treat your clients, your customers with respect, but don't be a pushover either. You know, don't just take stuff. So that's the wisdom that I would, like, if I was in a 30-second clip, I'd say, you know, treat it like a business. You know, business owners have contracts. Business owners have... For, you know, corporations, business owners are strategic thinkers. They're not just, you know, trying to make a quick buck. Business owners are trying to make a profit, and there's nothing wrong with that, but don't make a profit at the expense of hurting people. So those are my wisdom points. What would be your wisdom points?
Yeah, so mine for sure, number one is first and foremost, and I know most entrepreneurs and business owners don't like it, but... You have got to get some education and learn and know your financial statements, right? And I think, you know, everything really ties back to that, right? Every single business that closes, they didn't have strong profits and they run out of cash, right? And so to me, like my wisdom point is, you know, you don't have to fully immerse yourself in accounting. But you do need someone in your corner or some place to learn from and get a, you know, enough knowledge, you know, to be dangerous with it, right? So that you can guide and run your business and understand the financial statements, right? And a lot of the clients that I work with, when they come to me, you know, they don't get balance sheets, they don't get cash flow statements, and that's not uncommon. Nothing to be embarrassed about, right? Not your original expertise, right? But it is something I think that, you know, the small business owners in America have really got to, you know, take a dive in and really, you know, get after that stuff, get educated on it, learn about it. You know, and like I said, get someone in your corner that can help you with that.
Yeah. And I think, you know, division of labor is a key point. You know, I always talk about when people ask me, you know, you should have a good CPA, a good attorney. and a good financial advisor, right? Those are at the top because they're not the same. And that's one of the problems. CPAs are great for taxes, but I have yet to find them that they are great for financial advice. And that isn't a dig on them. Just like I don't do taxes either for a darn good reason, right? Like it just, no. Do I do my own taxes? Yes, absolutely. But I don't do other people's taxes. I did. Once upon a time, I was a representative for H&R Block. I did personal income taxes. And I enjoyed it a lot, but I didn't, that wasn't my niche. That's not what I enjoyed the most. And so, but the point is getting people that can do those jobs for you so that you can be the decision maker, right? Like that's really the key is if you're a business owner, you should be a decision maker as well, right? You shouldn't just be like, one of the things that before I started my career as an attorney, I talked with lots of different business owners and they loved what they did, but they hated the bureaucracy and the crap and the administrative work, right? So if that's not what you like, why not find people for what you do like that can handle that for you so you can focus on what you like, right? Like on what's important. And to, you know, so it's good to offload that stuff. It's worth the money to pay people to do the things that you don't like. You know, when you're an employee, you basically have to put up with whatever somebody gives you, right? Like, I mean, and so sometimes depending on how big or small the company can be, you might wear a lot of hats. But if you're the employer or if you're the person that's in charge, you should absolutely not be doing that, right? You need to be to make good decisions based on information provided by the people that you trust and have good, strong, knowledgeable advisors so that you can move the company in the right direction. No CEO that's ever been profitable and or positive has been down there doing the work themselves. Never. It's in the history of all that exists. Never. Yep. Like, should you know about those things? Like undercover boss type style? Sure. There's nothing wrong with paying attention to the details at the base level, right? Like understanding the customer experience and understanding the client experience, understanding all of these different layers of complexity that you do as a business owner. Absolutely. Understand them so that you can make better macro decisions. But don't just focus on the micro as the business owner. And I see a lot of business owners do that where they like doing the work. They don't like doing the administrative, but then they don't want to hire anybody either for it. And then they do a terrible job at it. And then they're miserable and it's just not a good look, right? Like it's way more stressful than it needs to be.
They get trapped into wearing too many hats.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a struggle. Anybody that's owned a small business knows it's a struggle.
Mm-hmm.
So let's kind of move on. Shared your wisdom, know your numbers. Don't be afraid to learn about them. And I think we talked about education a little bit, and I think that's so important. You don't have to get your bachelor's, you don't have to get your master's, unless that's what you want to do. But they used to be in California, there was called a ROP courses, a regional occupation program. And they were just vocational training, right? And there are out there accountants that are more than happy to teach, right? And finance managers that are more than happy to do this. So if they can't afford to hire you, find a way to at least understand what you're looking at when your numbers are, where your numbers are. The same thing goes for law. Like you can take my course as a business attorney at the local community college. It's very inexpensive. It's not crazy expensive. Even if you don't want to get a degree, having a basic knowledge of law can only help you. It certainly can't hurt you. And it doesn't mean you have to enroll and, get a 4-year and da 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 da. But anyway, so let's kind of move on to the net profit CFO. What makes you different than another company? Because I've interviewed several people that are they work in different areas of finance and some similar, but I want to know why someone would, I don't want to say hire you. I don't mean it like that, but what makes you different?
Yeah, so I think small business owners, they've got to be really careful. There's a term in the marketplace called fractional CFOs, right?
Heard of it?
Fractional CFOs, you know, their job is they come in and they're kind of on a contract. They come in, they help a business owner solve a problem, and then the contract's up and they're gone, right? So for example, maybe we've got a business owner that's trying to go get a loan or line of credit for their business, and they go to the bank and the bank says, yeah, we're interested in, you know, entertaining that for you, but, you know, we need to see an analysis on your financials. We need to see a 5-year business plan. We need to see a 5-year forecast, right? So the business owner goes out and hires the fractional CFO to get that done. So then they get that done. They go back to the bank, they get their loan, but the fractional CFO is gone, right? And so now that they've gotten their money, you know, how should they be spending it, right? What's the best way to go about spending it?
Right.
You know, there's not a guide there to help them with that. Their CFO is gone. The contract's done, right? So our firm, me, I work with business owners on an ongoing basis. Right. And I'm really there to guide them through those kinds of decisions. And so I'm not here today, gone tomorrow when the contract's up. It's a, you know, flat fee. I'm helping you work through challenges as they come up. You know, part of my intro that you shared with the group is I am part of a larger CFO network called the CFO Project. And so if I'm working with a business owner in a specific industry or niche that, you know, maybe I'm not 100% familiar with, I've got a large network of over 250 CFOs that I can go to and really, you know, ask questions, right? We're all there to support each other in the CFO Project. We're all there to, you know, build a CFO practice. And so those other CFOs are doing things, you know, the same way that I am and, you know, running the same type of system that I am. And so I've got other CFOs to bounce ideas off of, learn from, ask questions of, you know, and really have mentors. So that's a couple of good reasons to hire us and kind of how I'm different from another firm that you might hire.
Cool. Cool. So I think that's an important part. Here's one of the things that that I've found is that when I don't have answers, you know, it's so funny. People think that attorneys and other types of peoples, and I'm not just saying attorneys, but other position people of that have been in an industry or thing have all the answers, right? But the reality is no, we don't. But we know where to go find them, right? Like we have the biggest problem, and I say this about Google, is Google doesn't know the fifth question you need to ask. It only knows the first question you ask. And while it can say, well, did you mean this question? It doesn't know the chess situation, right? It only can play checkers, really, yep. Right? Google is really only good at playing checkers. Well, life is not like checkers. It's chess. And you need to have people that can look at these situations and not just predict the moment or the next moment or the moment after that. You need to have people that are looking at 5 years or however long that you need for your industry or your individual situation. But then beyond that, you need people that can get the information to move within that. And I think that that's such a different perspective than most people are like, well, if I can just get into business and make all this money, but making money isn't always what it's about, right? Like there's so much more to business than just making money. Now, is that a very important part of yes, absolutely. But most people are, you know, they get into business because they're like, well, I could do this, which is fine. But you need to also be thinking about the next steps, the fifth step and the 10th step. And Google just isn't good for that. Google doesn't have that knowledge and it never will. AI is never going to replace this because it only knows the questions that you program it to ask, right? Like no matter how detailed it is, it's not thinking 5 to 10, 20 steps ahead, 30 steps ahead, whereas you and I are, right? Like if you do this, this may happen. Now, can we predict the future? No. But can we have a better idea of what's going to happen with the future? Absolutely. Yep. So what else? What's your go-to thing, I guess? Because everybody has their thing. We talked about your wisdom points. What else would you like to share with my audience?
Sure. So I think the biggest thing is you can hire, you know, financial experts to get in your corner probably a lot sooner than what you think. So one of the first hires that I recommend to all small business owners, once you hit six figures, you can afford a part-time bookkeeper, especially, you know, the way that we all work today, you know, remotely and over Zoom. There's a lot of really good bookkeepers out there at a really reasonable rate for small businesses. And as a business owner, taking that piece off of your plate can be really crucial. You know, you make sure that you get a professional job done and that it's done right. And then, you know, as I shared before, you know, there are businesses that I work with that are $400,000 to $500,000 in revenue, right? As a CFO. And so, you know, I think that's important for business owners to know, is that you can start hiring, and it's not just in the financial world, right? It's not just bookkeepers and CFOs. It's in other industries too, right? People to help with marketing, people to help with sales. You can really start, you know, leveraging and hiring experts a lot sooner than what you think. And as you kind of talked about before, Taylor, is, you know, as a CEO, you know, you want to be doing the things that you like, and also, you know, being a resource to those other partners that you're working with to solve problems.
Right.
And so I think, you know, the more that you can get off of your plate, and the more that, you know, you can really dive into what you like and growing the business and making sure that it's growing profitably, the sooner you can do that, you know, the more healthy your company, you know, probably will be.
Yeah. And I think that it has to do with division of labor, right? Like, there's only 24 hours in a day. You can only do so much. You can only be so good at your job and be functional, right? Like, and you need multiple of you. Like, I ran into this just recently. Like, I had an employee, unfortunately, I had to let them go. And then my family got COVID, and I had all sorts of stuff happening in my personal life that I need me. I need a duplicate of me, and I'm it. I had at one point a couple of employees, and they were it wasn't working out, and I had to, you know, blah blah blah. But that's not the point. It was so nice to be able to concentrate on this other stuff while I was letting them concentrate on this the work that I needed them to do. And so. Realistically, it's like, especially in today's world where stuff happens, right? Like, you don't want to have everything in your, like, institutional knowledge is not a good thing, right? Systems and processes, those are all good things. And that's one of the keys is that I was able to keep my head above water, despite my family having COVID. I didn't, thankfully, but my other family members did, was because I had systems and processes in place. And was there work I had to do? Yeah, it wasn't fun, but I had to do it while I was taking care of my family that had COVID. And so, you know, if you're in that boat where it's just you, things like COVID can put you out of business, and not just not because you get sick with it, but because of those other things that happen. And so you really have to look at it as a more three-dimensional type thing, where a family member gets sick, or, you know, heaven forbid, you should want to take a vacation occasionally, right? Like, you know, and if everything depends on your success as the everything, you're going to have an upward slog. You know, I usually say it's like going up, molasses going uphill in the winter, right? Like, it's an old saying, but it's true, right? It's like, you can go, but it's going to be hard, and it's going to be so difficult, and you're not going to go as far, right? Because things are going to get dropped, things are going to happen, and it's not going to be as successful. So, well, it looks like we're just about out of time. Any last minute parting thoughts?
Yeah, really not that I think of. Not that I can think of. We went several places today, but I think they were all good and great for your audience and good learning points. And, awesome. You know, yeah, not that I can think of. I thought this was a really great conversation, and we covered a lot today.
Good, good. Tell my listeners where they can find you if they would like to reach out for more information.
Sure. The best place to find me is probably netprofitcfo.com.
Okay.
And I've also got a link on my calendar there. I offer that free, you know, front end, you know, right fit call or profit acceleration session, as I call it, you know, to determine if a client's a right fit for me, and I'm happy to have those conversations with your audience. And then, You can also find me on LinkedIn, Facebook, Ryan Kimler, K-I-M-L-E-R. And if your audience would like to email me if they have questions or anything like that, ryan@netprofitcfo.com.
Very cool. Well, thank you very much for your time. I sincerely appreciate it. And hopefully people will listen and take what you have to heart and maybe reach out to you if they have questions or whatnot. So thank you for your time. I appreciate it.
Yes, absolutely. You are very welcome.
All right. Well, that was Ryan. And he was outstanding. And like I said, we'd had many times where he had a schedule conflict, I had a schedule conflict, and it just was not working out. But we finally made it work. So I was very excited and very happy to have him on. I encourage you, as I've said repeatedly, and this podcast is all about, is thinking about your business tactically, thinking about it with intention, thinking about it with direction, as opposed to just letting whatever happens. So please, if you have questions, I've interviewed several finance gurus. Please reach out to them. Maybe Ryan's a better fit than some of the previous ones that we talked about, but please reach out to them and just know that I'm here. And as always, think about your business tactically.